ceremony. I did want to just make a quick comment. I see we have some cookies and punch. I hope that doesn't constitute a dinner meeting. So.
Don't worry, we're actually taking care of business here.
So, anyway, let's move on to our second topic today, which is the North Police Station financing. And I'm not sure who's going to lead off. Roger, if you're going to lead us through this?
I think, yeah, the information that was sent out to you, what we wanted to give you was an overview and a proposed timeline. And what we're looking for is, I guess, a definition in terms of scope and council's feelings on a timeline that we could follow. The previous information you've been provided, give you a brief refresher there. We purchased that property in November of 2016. The funds used to purchase that property, it's anticipated that we would use the acquisition price, roll that into the bonding. Price didn't actually deplete other necessary city funds. That's really the timeline that we're looking at in order to include that in the bonding process. Dale is not here today, and he can give you the kind of the nitty gritty on those questions. Bruce is here today, the architect, he can answer questions in regard to timeline and associated costs, and certainly in regard to what elements of that, if you so choose, could be phased in, and what are kind of the rock bottom necessities and what might be added later, or what the advantages are of just doing that all at one time. So if you have questions related to that, John's here, he's done most of the real work in terms of the background of this. Bruce will be able to answer your questions in regard to the construction process and timeline and associated costs.
So Randy, I think I'll carry on. Thanks for the introduction, Chief. We just have a few slides to go through that give a little more specificity. As the Chief said, there's obviously our experts in the room, so here's a high-level overview of the background. The first thing was really looking at the policy considerations, and we met in January 8th of this year. You asked us to do a couple things, and that was in the memo that Dale authored. One was to look at the potential use of the land, the excess land, we'll call it. The second was the cost, as well as what are some of the priorities that might be that we aren't able to forego. So here, first thing was really looking at if you want to proceed, are you comfortable with the scope that's been provided to date? And then second, and it's a real financial question, do you want single-phased or multi-phased project, and then as I said, are you comfortable deferring that decision on how to utilize the rest of the land to a future date? So the project itself, the top line there, arrow, is really where we're at to date. Bruce provided us an update, and really those arrows on the left going down are all the touch points for the council. So you can see going into this, they were asking you if you really want to pursue it. If you do, we'll be back, not quite monthly, multiple times over the course of the next few months to get the documents created from a schematic design all the way through construction documents and ultimately for us to bid the project or not. As the memo said, a single phase project is about a $22 million expense. We've calculated right now an annual debt service payment of about $1.6 million. If you look at the phased approach, the bottom line goes up a little more for a couple of reasons. One is anticipation of higher construction costs in the future, as well as potential to have some the related bonding expenses that would increase by helping the double issuance there. Just some of the assumptions that we're using for this, looking at a 20-year payback period, 3.5% rate. As Dale's mentioned, we can smooth it in the initial year by going interest only, and then from there, obviously having the full burden of the payment. And then one of the things that the Chief already mentioned is looking at having the issuance by November 2019 if the council still wants to continue with cost in that bond. If not, then we're going to find another way of satisfying the internal obligation that we have. And the teams did a nice job after your last conversation of really looking at the site again, as we put in your packet, looking at about roughly a third, give or take, of the land there. What we're recommending is rather than having discussion on what the potential could be for that space, first before the project, and then a later date, the council could have that conversation of what are some other potential uses that could happen on the land. And with that, I think we're ready for some conversation or questions you may have. Myself, Brady is also here representing finance in Dale's absence today.
Steve, before we get there, because we're talking about such a large chunk of property, when you're talking about phases or one phase, are we just talking about the Think Bank building itself and the addition, or are you talking about the TBA area?
The phases are just related to the police facility itself.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, Councilor, if I could for 1 second, just to clarify the question as well. So when we were first looking at the project, the discussion was whether you do the garage addition, which has some additional usable space in the garage, and then remodeling of the existing facility for police as well. So at one point, we divided those two out to distinguish two separate projects. So I think the big thing was by doing it all together, it's a little bit more project cost, but ultimately it saves an inflation cost and other associated project costs to do it as a second project. And I think that's, as Steve said, I think that's what was presented the last week, back on February 5th.
I'm interested in taking a look at different parts of the scope, and I don't know if there's anything, any slide that has the different portions of the project, but I struggle with some of the very expensive parts of this project, in particular building a parking ramp for that site. And I just want to make sure that there's justification and value to add for all these different things, because surface parking is cheap and abundant, and structure parking is incredibly expensive, and we're talking about a project that we have no money set aside for in terms in the budget. So two things. Very much appreciate the setting aside the usable spaces for future use. Thank you. That addressed my biggest concern in the first portion of the first time we saw this. The other part of this, I guess, is the I'm interested in whether or not we should get further into the long-term budgeting process in terms of so we understand what's really available in terms of capital funds, because right now we're just not there yet. I understand the 29th or the November of 19th as well.
Other questions, comments? Mr. Campion?
I kind of put out the position that funding the $3.8 million existing costs, prior costs for phase one, to me, to rush a decision about a $22 million project for that, I think is maybe a little bit of an artificial deadline. I think tools exist, and we have the ability to find ways to finance what's already been spent out there. From my standpoint, last time we talked a little bit about shifting the budget to talk about policy packages. Is that what we're using in the terminology?
Decision packages.
Decision packages, yes. The idea here, I think, is good to go toward this phased approach. I think from my standpoint, the price tag forces me to then look a little bit about what's incorporated in the phases, whether or not it makes sense to go to a 3 or 4 phase approach, if that's really what we're talking about in terms of financing. And if we look at that as 4 terms based on finance, we've almost succeeded in phase one by just acquiring by dollar amount. So how do we just structure this so it makes sense for the budget long term? I saw a line in here that I thought made really good sense. We don't have a list of the big capital projects coming out. We know everyone's talking about their own capital project. So how are we going to put this in a list order of projects that we don't really know about yet? To some degree, I think that is a necessary precursor conversation to talk about the inventory of projects that are on the scale of $5 to $22 million and how many of those are out there. Because it is it's high a priority for me as public safety is. There's always this concern about the tax levy and how we're going concerns about, at least the note from finance, I thought it did a good job kind of laying out what our options are for financing that. The proposals as written, I just want to make sure we have the aperture wide open for other considerations.
Mr. Wildebeck?
Yeah, I think everybody's done a nice job covering the finances, but I also think what we have to do is find out what's needed to make this an operational facility. It doesn't do us any good to have a facility that we can't use. And also an area that we know we're extremely crunched for space, being down at the government center. We have a lot of places that need to be, and we want this to be an active facility for people to be able to come and talk to the police and make reports, as well as making sure the police department has the area available and the equipment available for them to do their job. So I think just kind of maybe to piggyback on to some of the things that have been said, if you're talking about multiple phases, what do we have to make this operational? And maybe that would help us more to understand what the cost is of the items to make this a fully functional or a functional area for the community.
To that, a little bit, if I could, Councilman, the study looked at a 20-year projection, and that's what it's based on, is kind of making sure that whatever is done will facilitate space needs for 20 years and beyond. We hadn't looked at what that immediate 5-year need would be or whatever. I mean, there's possibility. You're ultimately, the more you delay construction, of course, the more it is in the future. The state of Minnesota historically uses 6% per year for inflation. We've been looking at anywhere from 4 to 5% on most projects for inflationary impacts. The garage, if you're going to construct the garage, I understand what the councilman is saying about space. There's a large portion of what's needed currently for the police department is adequate and appropriate fleet storage for the squads that you all buy. A lot of them are parked outside in various other locations right now. So that the garage takes up the least amount of square footage. I'm not sure if you were to lay it out, I'm not sure how that would work on the site. But I guess to build the parking structure in phases would not be cost efficient. You know what I mean? To try to build that layer of precast structure. You could do some of the interior remodeling potentially over time. But again, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chief or Sergeant, one of the biggest needs right off the bat is patrol space. I think your patrol space is woefully inadequate. And a matter of fact, there's been some temporary space that was out at the transportation facility that lost that space, or is that coming up soon where you're losing that space?
Gradually losing
that space. So they're going from limited space to even more limited space as they lose other areas. So there's a question of how much is needed right away versus how much is needed long term. Ultimately, for the city, from a financial standpoint, you're absolutely right, Councilman. You've got the wherewithal to do this over time. Ultimately, it's less expensive to do it in a shorter time, but you can easily stretch it out to whatever you all think financially makes the most sense from a term standpoint. But.
So one of the key advantages to having structured parking is it helps in the preservation of assets. I totally understand why that's the case, and part of the reason why I'm skeptical as to whether that's justified in this particular case is we know, rightfully so, that these vehicles get beaten up pretty badly, and we turn them over, what, every 3 years or so, and that ain't going to change whether they're parked inside or outside, so that's why I actually want to see what the dollars are for these different functions, and I think Mr. Bilderback's point is spot on, that let's figure out how we meet the immediate needs right now, but I want to see what these other associated costs are and what the and what we lose by not doing them.
I guess I'll touch on the garage just a little bit. Part of the reason for the garage is the investment of the squad car, but it's all the components that go into the squad. So you have defibrillators, computers, Narcan for, you know, bring back people from opiate overdoses, and all those things have to be kept warm in a controlled environment and space, and that's why the garage concept is so critical. So then, and if we're changing over shifts or winter storms, people aren't going out and they're brushing cars off. I mean, the fleet is ready to go and it's being maintained on a regular basis. And I think we run into issues about trying to keep equipment warm and functioning to leave at a moment's notice. So the garage, to me, is one of the critical elements of getting the station going. But with that becomes a cascading effect of we move patrol, what we don't have in the building are locker rooms. So to have patrol there, then we need to have locker rooms. And so there's things that go together. We can obviously look at different phasing, but there are some parts to get it operational that require this portion of the controlled space that we're looking at. And we talked early on and toured other facilities in Minneapolis. We went to one of the precincts up there. They keep vehicles outdoors, but here it's the critical assets that are inside those squad cars that need to be available at a moment's notice.
John's absolutely right. From an operational efficiency, if you look what's happening around the country from a law enforcement standpoint, most areas in cold climates like ours are going with inside law enforcement or squad dwellings. So it does, for those exact reasons, operational efficiency tends to be improved, not just vehicle maintenance, but operational efficiencies.
Right, and I appreciate that. And part of the reason why I want to look at the scope and the individual costs is because everything is a cost benefit, and certainly operational efficiency in the long run can be a very big number. But you know, that's why I'm more interested in seeing these individual pieces, what the price tag associated with them are. But as it stands right now, the garage would be entirely then for squad cars, or would there be additional parking in there as well?
So the garage serves a number of functions. It supports the FMU, which is your kind of crime scene unit for accidents and things like that. There's a whole series of other support individual spaces in there as well. Again, so it's not all garage, it's other functions that don't actually fit in the existing building as well.
Yeah. There's no employee parking in there or anything like that?
There's none.
And I do want to say, you know, this is, you know, whenever we do a study, you're at a 50,000 foot level. Right?
Yeah.
Everything's still, look, our goal as the project were to get started, and I mentioned that to the chief and the sergeant as well, is you look for areas you could achieve some efficiencies. You know, can we actually work with a parking structure designer that, you know, that does these nationally, and can we create some efficiency in layout of space to help to minimize some of the costs in the overall footprint? And so we'll look wherever possible as things go forward. The goal would be, of course, to look for efficiencies, possible value added, value engineering approaches to minimize cost in the project and space.
Mr. Campion's comment got me thinking as well. He is correct. For the amount that we purchased this land for relative to the potential cost of the project, that should not necessarily be the deadline, particularly when you factor in the effect that if this got pushed back a year, eating that cost is pretty much offset by moving out the payments another year anyway. So I think that while it would be nice to hit that date, whatever it takes to make sure we have all the information that we're looking for would still be a higher priority for us.
Other comments, questions? Mr. Bilderbeck, did you have some comments?
No. Sergeant Turk answered them. I was just going to talk about the equipment and the items in the squad cars that have to stay in one. You can't look outside, so I think his point made it much better than I could.
Good. Mr. Campion.
I characterize that just so that you have some idea of what we're talking about in terms of that financial impact of that. The squad car itself is actually the minor part of that. We'll spend somewhere in the area of $30,000 to $35,000 for a squad car. The squad car outfitted costs $89,000 now. And that's computer equipment, radio equipment, lights, everything that goes with it. The car will last for 3 years, but all of that equipment needs to necessarily last longer than that. We take that equipment out and we'll put it in new squad car, and that's part of our concern about making sure that the greater part of that investment is protected and that it actually works when it needs to. You're all aware, you know, as much as they put into ruggedizing this equipment, particularly the computer equipment, camera equipment, radio equipment, is temperature sensitive. And it's a question of once it gets exposed to the elements and it doesn't work, actually that squad car doesn't work anymore for us. So it is a pretty critical piece that will keep that working. And as I said, the greater financial investment is we keep equipment working in the cars, even though you're right, they'll be rotated out of service after 3 years. The bulk of that equipment, actually the most expensive part, won't. That's the part that we're concerned about.
Roger, how many cars do we have at this moment, or police vehicles?
That's a good question.
Right now the inventory probably is between 80 and 100, but that's when you take all the specialty units and equipment, unmarked vehicles.
I think we're at 102. That's, that number fluctuates depending on the last time we got an accident. We're down a couple right now.
Mr. Campion?
In the study that was done, what was the projected timeline for launching phase two? Because there was an escalator built in for inflation. What was the timeline from the end of start of phase one to the start of phase two?
We anticipate 2018.
Yeah, we initially were anticipating that the first phase, which was the building of the garage addition portion, or that addition, was going to occur in 2018, with the second phase occurring in 2019. Now, I'm trying to remember the last packet of information that was presented on the 5th, and we changed a little bit based on where time has gone. So when we presented the information on February 5th, we showed the two different options of either building it in two phases or building it in single phase. At that point in time, we had looked at assuming starting construction on the first phase in 2019. So the year of design and actually starting construction in 2019. And then if you did the second phase, starting that in 2020. So we, in the last estimate, kind of slid it back a year and added the inflationary cost. So I think the numbers you're looking at now do take into consideration the inflationary cost.
So the reason for my fellow council members I bring that up is we're not, the study as presented hasn't projected the development of the precinct over a long enough time to actually collect any funds. So if we're talking about a total project timeline of 3 years, we can't actually tap like a fund we would build up over time to go and pay for portions of this. You know, anything we're talking about that's going to try and self-finance this versus going for the bond approach is going to take a longer period than that. So, you know, if we are, and the thing that's bouncing around my head is there a way to kind of go minimum viable product? If that is the garage, that's the garage, doing that now, and then planning a reboot in a longer time period than 2 years. I mean, realistically, phase two being pushed out to maybe 5 years from now, when we have an opportunity to maybe put away some self-financed dollars to then use to bootstrap some of this. It just, it's a big ask without putting all of those capital projects out. I think, you know, that's what's kind of leading to my uncertainty here, is not knowing that full scope of what the rest of the city's departments needs are. So maybe I'll just leave my comments at that.
Mr. Bilbeck?
And I think that goes right back to what I was talking about before. I mean, you can build a garage, and if you move patrol, where's evidence go? Are you going to still make that come downtown? Is the downtown able to handle that? Or, and again, we want the officers on the street to be effective, so we don't want them driving back and forth to drop stuff off here. It'd be easier to have there. That's why, again, I say, if we're looking at that, we need to see what components are important to go with that. So if you build a garage, you're going to move patrol, they're going to have evidence, they need to have report rooms. We need to figure out what needs to go with them to make that workable.
This always becomes a little bit of a chicken and egg problem, because we send you back, we come up back with another revision, we have a problem with that. I mean, one other way to work this is to set a budget cap and to say, come back with a plan that gets done what you can within this reason. To me, a bond with a carry cost of 1.7, was it 1.7? Your side went back pretty quick.
Yeah, 1.6,
1.7. 1.6 or 1.7 is probably beyond what I'd like to see capacity going for this. Not that that's the facility beyond the needs of the department, but that we may have to just look at what we can actually contain in capacity there. Because I know that I'm aware of other projects that are coming up. So maybe a better way to look at this would be, what's the sort of cap to put on this and have you guys work back for what's the most logical project to attack with inside that budgetary cap, instead of going the other way to say, what's the most logical project from the police department standpoint, and then us trying to figure out how to make the finances work.
Roger, question. What's the cost of a fully outfitted squad, roughly? The car plus the equipment?
$89,000.
And I think part of what I'm hearing in the discussion is I think that there's validity in wanting to understand the scope and that we're including the right components, which would argue for more of a phased approach. But the dilemma here is I'm also concerned about the substantial investment in assets that we have here. These aren't just regular run-of-the-mill vehicles, and so I'm a little conflicted as far as what's the best approach in terms of protecting these city assets to the best of our ability. So that seemed to be kind of that's where I'm stuck a little bit. I understand the arguments about strategic direction and scope, but I'm also cognizant of our investment in city assets as well.
Mr. Ruska.
Could someone from staff explain the future use area there? Is that anything that we could put back out on the market to see if we could recover some of the cost of the initial investment? And then you're putting it back on the tax rolls and, you know, possibly, and you know, that would help crack that nut of the $3.8 million and still allow us to move forward with some plans. So I guess I'd be interested in looking at that.
Mr. Campion?
I want to echo that sentiment and add that unless there's a compelling city reason for maintaining ownership of that property and some sort of obvious plan that we're all missing, I think getting a realtor estimate of what that land value is would be logical to me so that we can understand over the course of this entire project what we're actually looking at with that land there. Obviously, the police department is going to probably not prefer that option because it will limit future expansion of the facility. But I think we need to understand the deck of cards before we start making hands.
We don't necessarily want the extra money cut.
Mr. Nygaard and then Mr. Wojcik.
Just a point for clarification. I think that the idea of selling property is a fine thing, but I know that we've sold property in the past and we'll come back and repurchased it because we thought it a need for that. I think before we do that, staff need to make sure there is no city use for it.
Mr. Wojcik.
I would echo that. That's certainly a good point. It doesn't hurt for us to understand what's there, but because of the location of that, which is potentially desirable for a number of uses, we should also take a look at how we should possibly zone and entitle that property before putting it on the market, just to make sure we get the best value for it.
And perhaps that's a reasonable compromise where we might light on a solution that says let's do the phase 1-2, which gets us the garage and protection of asset, but definitely hold in abeyance the idea of what might happen to that other parcel. Consider our options there in terms of perhaps putting it back on the market or some other use. Mr. Campion.
So I've referenced it a few times and the police department's off the hook a little bit. The idea of a list of capital projects, that's outstanding. I know that's something that we have talked about with you historically. Where would that effort be at today?
So as we talked about last week, I see the CIP, capital improvement projects, be a two-year process. I would say this year the departments themselves will probably take a good effort to start to prioritize within the departments. So here's the capital improvement program right here. And so it'd be prioritizing those as well as if anything else has come up. And then we would probably start to look from an organization-wide how we prioritize amongst all projects. And so I don't think we'd be at the point where we'd have everyone this year, but we'd have some.
What I'm asking for is a little bit different. So like this project, for instance, didn't really make it into the CIP until it was already kind of imminent, I would say. Mm-hmm. From my standpoint, I want to know about imminent capital decisions that need to be, that are outstanding. I think there's probably some department heads that would be able to formulate this because there's an imminent decision in front of us that we don't have the full picture for making the decision in front of us. I want to just assemble a subset of the total information you just talked about, which is important work, but something to support this decision-making process. And I don't know how fellow council members feel, but I feel like that's a missing piece of the puzzle here. I can't go after and sleep well maybe a $15 or $20 million investment in the police department if I don't know that there's a secret $30 million investment into some other department that we don't know about and we might get hooked into. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to get a little bit of perspective on.
So I'll help define imminent then, so we don't have six different.
Yeah, I would say
definitions of that word.
I would say projects likely to break ground in 2016 or first half 2019. That would be my imminent 18 months maybe. I don't know what other people are thinking.
Swojcik?
Well, I'm one of the questions that I would like to send back to staff is specifically, what are the needs out there? Understanding we have assets out there today and we have assets downtown today and we are functioning today. What meets the needs of the department for the next 3 to 5 years? And what is the dollar amount associated with that as kind of as a starting point, a minimum project scope? I don't expect you to have that answer today, but I would be interested in that.
So that brings up the question of, I was just looking at the timeline here, and I know there's an expectation of a decision here in mid-March or so. Are there some key questions that would help us render a decision that we could get in that fairly short timeline and still kind of keep us on track?
So,
Mr. Reimer?
I'd summarize so far what I've heard, starting with the last points, is looking at some of those near-term capital needs. From an organization standpoint, starting with the departments, we're going to have to look at both new as well as there's existing needs that are out there supplied to the departments again, both in terms of just take care of our own assets that we have today. So that's one. I'd suggest that the chief and team with our architect look at potential operational options that we can then roll into different phases. So you have that information as well. We can do some different work from a financial standpoint. I'll bring back just a few more examples or ideas on the financing. Not to say that we're going to find a different way than a general obligation bond, but we can tie those to the phasing so you can see over time how that rolls in. So that's what I've heard, I think, to date, that if we came back with that information, it's going to take probably the prioritization of projects. It's going to take a little more time with the other departments. We can start working on the other part. Rely on their expertise in terms of what's that baseline operational need. Make sure you have that as your baseline project.
Okay. Scampion?
And I would, if it helps, I would say the prioritization is not as important to me in the immediacy of this decision. It's more of, I want to know the playing field, because I think, like you have said before, the prioritization is an effort for the council to go through to some degree. If I can at least see the playing field and know what pieces are out there, I think that will help me know. I can tell if we have seven $20 million projects, that's different than if we have two $20 million projects, which is different than, on and on. But I think seeing that field will help us all feel a little bit more comfortable as we kind of evaluate what's going to happen.
Mr. Newman?
Yeah, you probably want to remember and divide your projects into two groups, or you may not. This is in a subset of those that you can do without a referendum. There's a lot of other projects, this one, the libraries and public works projects, public safety, public works, library. A lot of the other projects you might be considering fall into a bucket where you actually would have to go to the voters, and this is one that you don't have to do that. So when you're looking at your list, you may want to put them into different buckets. I guess that'll be a decision for the administrative staff and the council going forward. But I just wanted to point that out. This is in a little different and some of the other ones that might come up.
Okay. I'm not sensing that we have a consensus for a decision today, but I'm curious to hear from Mr. Hickey or Ms. Johnson to see if you have some thoughts.
Yeah, so I'll say, for everything I've heard today, I agree. I don't see how we just put this on the tax levy as presented. I think the idea of getting the needs broken down, so again, not necessarily the phases of the project, but I think they'll align. You mentioned 3 to 5 years, but if it's a 20-year project, what are the needs for the first five and the second five? Break it down that way, and I think that would help us prioritize the funding and how we're gonna do this. But as it's presented, I don't see how we get this on the tax levy as presented.
Okay, Ms. Johnson.
sounds like an echo chamber in here. No, I absolutely agree with prioritizing the capital improvement projects. I think that's important, knowing what needs to be spent on different projects is a great start. Once again, I don't see a rush either. Sorry. But getting this, you know, getting the ideas together and then bringing it forward again. Yeah.
Well, frankly, I'd like to see a little bit of direction from administration from your team on this, to maybe talk about it with your team. I mean, Dale's got some input in here. Gary's got some ideas. But, you know, we are kind of building a new team now, and I think this is important to have us with the new process of budgeting and how we're looking at this to kind of figure out how it all fits in. So I think boiling it down a little bit more to some basic decision points and then having some ideas on the pros and cons of that that I'd see a little bit from staff would help us a little bit on the overall big picture and what our options are in it.
And I'd anticipate the next time we meet, only within the next couple month period, that we'd have a recommendation in front of you.
Very good to see that.
So take this up again at one of the next couple committee of the holes. Is that what you're suggesting?
Next couple, maybe we'll move as fast as we can, I think, for everyone's sake. The police know where we're heading. We'll just need a little time to do some prioritization. We'll keep it at a higher level, is what I'm hearing, so that helps. You guys can do a little of the work that we mentioned, and then when Dale gets back. So today we're at the end of February, getting towards the end of February, so I'd say hopefully during the month of March.
Okay. Because if I'm reading it today, there seems to be a leaning towards a phased approach for a variety of reasons, making sure we understand future needs and from a financial standpoint.
I realize we have plenty of business to cover, so I don't want to reopen the conversation, but I would say a phased approach, and I'm also hearing prioritize the near-term needs and the phases. So it's not just a phased approach, but we need to have phases that we are not dependent on phase two for the building to be functional. And we're willing to kind of accept different levels of service based on our capacity for new tax or new revenue and the need to prioritize the near-term service. So.
Okay. So we'll take it up again. All right.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. I was going to ask Roger if when you retire and I finish this year, maybe we could go together on a Dunkin' Donuts franchise and satisfy all those soccer companies across the road. It's paid for that lot.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
So our remaining topic for this afternoon is a continued discussion of the draft comprehensive plan. Before we get started, I have a couple of comments. It was interesting. I happened to see a couple of interesting articles in MinnPost today that kind of caught my eye. One of the things that they talked about is we talk about the millennial population, and sometimes some derogatory things are said about that population, but and where they the lifestyle and where they would choose to live and so forth. But interestingly, the state demographer is showing that for the millennial population is following a very similar pattern as prior generations. In other words, there is a desire to be close to amenities, close to a core downtown area, for example. But then as they reach an age of about 30 or so, and they start to think about having a family, they also prefer to have or live in a section of town that has more space, a suburb, if you will. So I just thought that was interesting that demographically, we're seeing some of the same patterns as we've seen in the past. So that might influence, to some degree, how we plan for the future. Then the other interesting article talked about Frogtown up in St. Paul. And they were talking about their comprehensive plan and specifically small area descriptions, such as what we're talking about. And they talked about the government legalese in the comprehensive plan and how it just didn't resonate. It didn't serve to engage the public. And I thought it was really amusing that one of the examples, sentences they called out is neighborhoods should maintain a character and so forth. And they said that means nothing to us. And so they tried to put it in language that more layperson's terminology, and they're wrestling with that right now. And the humorous side of it is that they've even reduced it to creating comic strips to help educate and convey the idea. And like it or not, it's resonating better with the residents of that area in terms of being more interested in planning and engaging that process. I just thought those were timely and somewhat interesting. So with that, we would intend to continue our discussion today. And I think we left off with the conclusion of Section 9 last time, if I'm not mistaken. So we would begin with Section 10. And Mr. Hickey.
Let's just throw this out here real quick as we get started. We spent a lot of time wordsmithing individual policies underneath these broader goal headings, and it seems a lot of times we came back to the point, you know, this is just an implementation detail, let's not get too hung up on the exact words. I mean, I think there's pretty broad support for the 22 goals. I mean, is there any thought we just go with the 22 goals and the policy and the individual bullets or policy implementation decisions as we flesh out, you know, how we're going to do this?
You're right. That comment came up, and I actually went back and just listed on a single sheet of paper just those 22 goals. And I don't know. In some respects, that makes a lot of sense because it really encapsulates what we're trying to do. Facilitate safe, efficient motorized travel, period. Enhance park and ride commuter services. I mean, those are things that you could argue perhaps a sentence or two to elaborate on those, but is that simpler definition, is it more appealing or more amenable to people? I don't know. I had the same thought. That's why I did the exercise myself. But what do others think about that? Because I think you're right. We tend to get lost in the weeds as we get into some of the sub goals and policies. Mr. Campion?
For that particular concept, I'm wondering how we envision staff implementing the plan. Because to me, the broad concept is so nebulous as to be able to allow or as to necessitate additional clarification. So I always looked at the sub-bullets really being clarifying the scope of our engagement or our probable engagement under a topic. It's clarifying objectives to an overarching kind of objective. And I worry a little bit about, you know, how great or how broad a policy or a goal would really be is create, maintain neighborhoods attractive to current and future residents, unless we take some time to further distill that. That could really be anything.
Yeah, and let me give an example. If I look at the goal section name for Section 3, maintain the community's commitment to health, wellness, and the environment. Where we started to get stuck are some of the 8 sub-bullets where we talked about access to healthy food and things like that. So I wonder if that's what's leading to some of our some reluctance or some misunderstanding in terms of the ambiguity. Does that section title say what it needs to say? Because we know a lot of the detail is going to come later in the constituent order. Mr. Hickey, then Mr. Wojcik.
So, I mean, I think a lot of this is going to get codified in the land development manual, not every single thing, but much of it. And from what I understand, the process is going to be working. This process can be at council input and checkpoints instead of trying to gather, you know, input at the end and revisit all this. So if that's really the process we're going to use, it seems like that's where we'll make the checkpoints and course corrections as we go.
Mr. Wojcik, then Mr. Campion.
Yeah. So that was one of the items that I spoke to the city administrator about this is all of these policies that are under there, we have to remember there's a tremendous amount of community input that went into these, and this is what came forward from our professional staff. And to that point specifically, one of the ones that I think there was some discussion on removing last time that I'm no longer willing to do was the access to healthy food. And I was contacted by some professionals in the industry that gave me a pretty good talking to about why they worked hard to have that in there and why since I don't oppose that in any way, I'm content having that in there. What I would simply say is that now, if the majority of the council wants to go another way, I'm not going to take my toys and go home or anything. But I just want to, you know, just be on the record on some of these that they are worthy of being in the plan, and I do support them.
Mr. Campion, you
had I left last meeting pretty optimistic about where we're going. I thought we were doing a pretty good job of going through the sub-bullets. I obviously support a number of these sub-bullets and think that they're important. I think they do a good job of declaratively saying things we do support and not leaving it vague and open to interpretation what some of these other things mean. So, you know, I think there's benefit to both the development community and to our community in general to being declarative about our support for certain policies. It's better than the alternative, which is to leave all these things open to unlimited interpretation and have an unlimited number of different interpretations open up or show up on our desk. I actually don't think that's the best possible outcome here. So if we don't support it, and the majority are enough to pass it out, we don't support it, then let's take it out of this guide so that there's no confusion. I would rather remove something I feel supportive of and pass this than remove them all and leave it so vague that it doesn't really serve as a meaningful document.
Okay. Mr. Bildebeck?
We're halfway through this. We might as well continue and just and come back to it. I think it is important to point out, as Mr. Hickey said at the last meeting, we got through 17 before. When you got back, we only got through 10. So I think you're wasting time. We might as well just keep going.
All right. So we're at section 10, and we can move through that. And I think probably Mr. Rusk and I have most of the comments, but others will chime in. The only question I had on 10.3 is whether we've successfully encompassed the idea of the DMC guidelines and how that may or may not conflict with the core business district. I wasn't quite sure that the DMC guidelines were taken into account. I don't know if that did that get discussed.
I think it's fair to say that those guidelines are a huge step in trying to identify the kind of character and quality that is anticipated. What they don't do, though, is address that transition between the core of the downtown and the adjacent neighborhoods. And that's a piece that we would need to tackle with the zoning ordinance if we're looking at the near downtown neighborhoods and any zoning policies. So that's really where this is headed, this comment.
Okay. And again, I was just wondering what happens if we get into that scenario where we kind of emphasize CBD, but then if we, for a given project, if there's explicit conflict with the DMC guidelines and how we're going to reconcile those. And that's kind of a rhetorical question. I was just raising it as an observation. And again, on 10.5, this is really, and I think you're going to find a lot of my comments are similar to things we've answered last time, but 10.5, I just wanted to make sure, I like the idea of using verbiage that's more all-inclusive as opposed to specifically calling out transit, bicycle, pedestrian, because then I wonder, well, what are we doing about automotive traffic? And I think we answered that last time, that we could use some language that was a bit more all-inclusive. And then finally, on 10.8, it talks about expanding the role of municipally administered parking enterprise. And I guess I kind of immediately reacted, does that mean we are or are not necessarily in favor of more parking or parking ramps, et cetera, especially in the downtown area? Again, I don't know if that creates a conflict or if that statement could be misinterpreted. Those were the only comments I had in section 10.
I'd like to hear a response to 10.8.
I'd like to give you a good one, but I'd have to go back and consult with Charlie on what his thinking was behind that, because as I read it, it's not very clear to me, to be honest.
Can we just get a clarification if it's written or something?
Okay. Did you have anything?
Yeah, on 10.4, 10.3, I'm sorry, the high standard, how do we decide what the high standard design guidelines is? Is there a way to determine that?
Well, ultimately, the council decides that when and if you amend the zoning policies to define what those standards are, or when you're reviewing individual projects or issuing approvals for TIF projects, you're making some determination around that on a project-by-project basis.
So promote building design and character that enhances is kind of a little bit in the eye of the beholder, but then that's kind of the council's decision is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if a developer's new project doesn't accomplish this, then is that going to be reason for denial if it's just kind of the same as some of the other places in the area?
Ultimately up to you.
Okay.
And I think in past instances you've weighed the options between design and projects and economic development and other things, so
okay.
Anticipate that to continue.
If I might, I would say, you know, the way this is worded, we could actually say we're meeting the objective simply by holding the queued awards. I mean, the way this is worded is simply that we're going to set a high standard. It doesn't say how we're going to hold them to it. So, it is a little bit like you can cherry pick whatever policy you want, really. And I think that's, again, comes back to this idea that we're going to set how these are actually achieved.
Okay. Is it?
Yep.
All right. Section 11. Again, so 11.3, I'll say I like those kinds of statements where that is something we talk about collecting, tracking, reporting data. Again, we're wanting a lot of our decisions to be information-driven. 11.6, I had said that, once again, I was questioning whether we're talking about reducing number of car trips in the core downtown or everywhere in the city, and I don't know if we need to be more explicit there. But maybe more important, the entirety of Section 11.1 or 11, we know we'll have a comprehensive transit plan strategy. I still wonder whether that whole section couldn't be summarized. We talk about developing a comprehensive transportation plan or system per the report or per the standards and guidelines as articulated in the transit master plan. And I wonder if that would be would serve us better than the 11 points that are listed here. That's a question. I don't know if that came up. Again, I think one of the issues or one of the questions we had is when we have references to plans that are outside of this document and how are those folded in, is this an opportunity where we say, yeah, it's a goal to have a comprehensive transportation system per the outlined transit strategy, Mr. Campbell?
So which transit strategy are we referencing?
The one we are working on now.
The DMC one?
Pardon?
The DMC focus one or the
the one we're going to see this week, mm-hmm. and when we talk about that transit
integrated
study.
That's all I have.
Questions, comments on that? Or Mr. Ruska, did you have other comments on that section? That's all I had.
11.2, it's the mode shift targets. I'd like maybe mode shift options or, I don't know, targets. The targets are going to be set and determined, and that's what we're aiming at.
They've already been set and adopted by the council and downtown master plan.
Okay.
So those exist already, and they are part of your comprehensive plan.
Okay.
There may be some updated ones that we have to entertain in the future, but we do have some now.
Okay. 6. So the strategies that we in 11.6 that are aimed at reducing the number of car trips, that's the same thing?
And that, again, is very downtown-focused, and it's how do we continue to get more and more people in and out of our downtown without all of those people taking cars as their means of travel, because we simply can't fit them into the downtown that way.
Mr. Hickey.
On 11.6, we do seem to be jumping back and forth on the kind of the wording. Are we reducing the number of car trips and miles driven, or reducing the rate of growth, recognizing the number of growing cities? So see it worded different ways and under different policies. Actually, that was a question. Are we trying to reduce the actual car trips or just the rate of growth of car trips?
It maybe should be worded to reference the rate of growth in car trips, or the percentage of car trips. Because even
yeah.
if with a percentage decline, you're still going to have an increase in total
right.
net growth.
The mix.
Yeah.
So what about that thought of deference more to the plan that we anticipate, transit plan, as opposed to the all of the sub-bullets? What do people think about that idea? And I would presuppose the same thing for some other parts of the plan. If we're going to defer to the bicycle master plan, then let's do that and say that and not confuse it with some of the sub-bullets. Mr. Icky?
Just to reiterate, I am in favor of 22 goals and not wordsmithing all these sub-policies, so I would certainly support what you're saying.
Sandy?
I would just like to point out one connection that maybe we need to make sure is being acknowledged, and that is, while certainly a lot of these things are talking about the downtown transportation system, we still have to link it to the city as a whole. And so we need to make sure that we're taking into account what we're doing in all the neighborhoods throughout the city and how that's feeding into that downtown system. Well, that's what I'm trying to see is if maybe that concept isn't quite getting through clearly enough.
I think what you're getting at, Sandy, is if we take out all the sub-bullets under 11, we've stripped away the integrated strategies around land use and transportation, and we haven't been clear in communicating to the community, to the electeds, to the developers, and to others what the expectations are and how we're going to start to move toward the overarching goal and what things are most important for us to be paying attention to.
Anyone else?
I guess
this can't be.
Oh, 11.5, just kind of a part in there that talks about the road system should be enforced to protect the community's investment. How would that be enforced, or how is that, that reference?
We did talk about this at a previous meeting, and part of what that's getting at is we have different classifications of roadways that are following a federal functional class, if you will. They're the higher order roadways that we need to make sure those are some pretty significant investments that we're maintaining,
okay.
and we're respecting those. And part of that is even having land use strategies and access management plans that maintain a certain level of function on those.
Mr. Campion?
I'm just the entirety of the conversation surrounding the integrated transit plan. I'm not really prepared to have today. Whether or not we should defer to it would, in many ways, probably depend on what's in it. I have an overarching concern about the construction of this document, which I think we've referenced before, about just pointing out to a bunch of other documents that are surface area for potential issues. It becomes a combination of all the documents. I don't share Councilmember Hickey's concern about the bullets, but as long as we're here, it'd be nice if we could get a set of bullets so that if we decide we didn't want to just reference the transit plan, we had a set that most people could agree.
Mr. Hood?
My two cents on this is I very much want to address the issues with these bullets that individual council members may have, understanding that at this point a majority of the council is okay with this set of bullets and we're trying to fine-tune them.
Anything else? Mr. Ruskin?
Still on 11. So 11.9, one of the things that I question here is we've talked about ensuring mobility for all ages, but our biggest numbers are in our studies show in the 50 and 60-year-old areas. Are we focusing on them, or are we just focusing on kind of just, are we looking at the demographics as we're making these decisions?
Absolutely.
Okay, all right, very good, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Campion.
Does it, so there's the, now that I have thought of it, the wording of this particular 11.3, collect, track, and report data, we want to say like it's anonymous data, because we are not tracking individual riders or their riding habits. I just want to reiterate, I think we just that's unfortunately in the information sector that could be kind of concerning. So maybe just add anonymous in there. That'll give marching orders too in case anyone had an idea.
else, or we'll move on? All right, section 12. The only question I had there in terms of both bullet items are we, when we talk about the local transit network, we're not talking about just downtown, right? We're talking about citywide?
That's correct. So it would be thinking about that primary transit network,
okay.
Broadway, 2nd Street, 4th Street.
Then does that conflict with section 13 where you talk about establishing a primary transit network?
I don't think it conflicts with it, but it's also connecting into that primary transit network. So 12 is more encompassing of the whole community, but it feeds into that primary transit network, and then 13 really focuses in on that network specifically.
Let me rephrase that. So what I'm wondering is if section 13 is redundant to section 12. If we're going to enhance the local transit system network and it encompasses the entirety of the city, what else does section 13 tell me?
Talks about the region.
I'm sorry?
Talks about region 13.1. About halfway down talks about connections to regional travel services, such as park and rides and others, which would be outside the downtown area.
The PTN itself is something that's entirely new to Rochester. We've never had anything quite like it before. We're offering a high frequency, high development intensity corridors around the city. So I think that, Macy can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this is one of the cornerstones of the plan.
I would agree. So 13 is a little bit more granular in that it's calling out some of the features and investment priorities for the primary transit network. Really calling out that that's where you're going to focus your highest level of service, and that you're going to develop the highest frequency and efficiency of travel options.
Okay. Mr. Rusty, any comments? Okay. That really was my only question on section 13 as well, whether 12 and 13 were mutually exclusive of one another or really one and the same. I understand the regional component, but anything else? Otherwise, we'll move to section 14. Section 14, again, I'll raise the same observation where we talk about improving Rochester's bicycle network to accommodate users with different skills and abilities. Does that not say it all? And I know we may or may not want to refer to another plan, the Bicycle Master Plan, but are the other bullets really necessary? Question for the group.
14.5 is not necessary.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree to strike that one.
Mr. Hickey?
I'll just have the same answer for every time they ask.
I'm sorry.
I'm fine with the goals.
Just
to be clear.
So wait, how do you feel about the goals?
Just to be clear.
All right, Mr. Ruska.
I'd like to see us eliminate all 14.1 through 14.5 on this one.
I'll give you 14.5. I like Kevin 4.
So do we agree on the, again, do we agree on the goal? Is there anyone that doesn't agree with the goal? That's probably an important starting point here.
You're talking about the heading for 14
yeah,
as
I
the
guess
goal?
I'm calling those the goals, and I'm calling the other ones the policies.
I didn't have a problem with that language.
So just to recap the discussion the two council members had missed, we talked a bit about 14.1 and being there being some concern about how that is executed, and then we skipped to 14.5 and discussed that item, and as a group, the majority concluded that one could be dropped.
Mr. Hickey.
So, if we're going to talk about the policies, and we did talk about this a little bit last time, 14.9, the frustration I hear from people is when we have the 16-foot recreational lanes, and on the same street, we've got marked bicycle lanes and then vehicle lanes. The idea that going to the same place that we have to have multiple bike routes, because we've got this concept of recreational riders can only ride it, or tend to ride on recreational trails, whereas these, you know, whatever we're calling utilitarian bicyclists, I consider the advanced or the hardcore bicyclists, they need to have this separate, you know, bike lane. So that's that was the concern I brought about last time, is as long as we're providing the path, you know, through the corridor, I don't see that we need to have special bike lanes or paths that are redundant. That's my thought.
Okay. Is that it for that section?
Yeah, I got it.
Mr. Campion.
In Councilmember Hickey's point, I don't think is lost on my point, which is the council only implements recreational trails and on-road trails as a detail of how to achieve this. I think we're all in agreement that utilitarian bike riders and recreational bike riders should be safe. We may actually be in disagreement only on how to accomplish that. So I don't think we want anyone to be less safe. And I don't think this bullet says we're going to accommodate both in the roadway or both on every stretch of street in Rochester. It's really, our goal is to make it safe for everyone. I would just hate to back away from some of these things I think we're actually doing. We may have disagreements about how we're accomplishing them. I think there's plenty of room to operate and to find agreement on better solutions. But to kind of throw this out might be being punitive to the language for our conception of how that language is currently realized. When we can throw out the realization of this language and find a new way to do it, and maybe a better way. I mean, frankly, maybe no way is better or is more effective. But I've said that a number of times, so I'm going to bear repeating something.
Mr. Wojcik.
So I'm just going to say all of the extensive comments I made on this very same section a few weeks ago, I'm just going to say that and say ditto.
Okay, anyone else? Otherwise, we'll move on to the next section. Section 15. I didn't have any particular comments there. Anyone else?
I don't believe there were any comments the last time around either.
I'm sorry?
I don't believe there were any comments on that section of previous discussion.
All right, section 16. Let's see. I really just a more of a general comment similar to some other ones in section 16.3 when it talks about emphasizing lower cost management strategies. You know, I what does that mean in terms of what does that mean in terms of how those strategies might manifest themselves? And again, I realize this is a higher level document, and I was looking for more specifics if possible, but that just jumped out at me, that's all. Mr. Ruska. Oh, Ms. Mitzi.
Your question reminded me that question had come up in our prior discussion, and when we talk about more efficient or lower cost strategies for traffic flow improvements, some of those measures include signal timing. They might include things that would not be necessarily physical construction, but they might be signal timing or spacing, or they might be access management strategies that minimize the number of disruptions onto the road network so that you can manage it and maintain a flow.
Mr. Ruska.
Is there any of the studies that we're seeing here that have anything to do with focusing on the current vehicle and vehicle growth patterns? It seems like everything is about the their options and not the current mode preferred by most. So, I mean, is that being factored into this?
Oh, yeah. We are constantly monitoring that and planning for it, and we're starting the long-range transportation plan update that addresses more of the major roadway pieces of the network.
So growth in those roadways?
Pardon me?
Growth in those roadways?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is that it? Okay, moving on to section 17. My only question there is, given the title, Enhanced Park and Ride Commuter Services, is that not addressed in section 13, where you talk about park and ride and so forth? Why is this one called out separately as its own section? Did that get discussed? Or I guess we're beyond where you got before, so.
16 was as far as we got.
I'm sorry?
16 was as far as we got, 17.
Oh, right.
Our staff.
So then that would be my question. What was the rationale for calling off park and ride commuter services separately? They seem to be referred to in section 13, talking about park and ride locations, regional transit, and so forth.
Do you think we can look and see if we can combine pieces of that together? The one difference here is 17.2 really calls out the regional accessibility, which is different from our local service and the PTN. But we can try to combine something there.
Okay.
Yeah. 13.1 and 17 can you get the same thing in the original?
Did you have anything on that section?
Nope.
Okay, I'm on section 18. As I read through section 18, I guess I was wondering, well, and again, this goes back to the sub-bullets versus just the heading. The sub-bullets, I was wondering what that was trying to tell me. It seemed like basically a lot of words that didn't tell me a whole lot, but Mr. Hickey.
I have a question on 18.3.
Okay.
What does it mean?
Go ahead.
Sorry. The question is, what is so embracing and nurture shared mobility services and innovation?
No, experiment by implementing small-scale pilot projects with limited scope that may have the potential to make an outsized impact. What are we talking about?
That's suggesting that Rochester consider doing what some other communities are doing and inviting the testing of some new innovation within their street networks to see if there are things that you want deployed more broadly. We don't always know what those are going to be. I think what we're trying to do is address the fact that there's a lot of transportation innovation that's changing very quickly, and we don't know in 5 years what availability there will be. Autonomous vehicles could be one of those.
So let me take another run at this. When I look at the heading for that, section 18, embrace and nurture shared mobility services innovation, so then 18.1 just seems like a lot more detail than what I need or what should be there. We're going to use a range of tools and an effective use of transportation systems, and then we call out several examples explicitly. And there again, I thought the heading pretty much said it all. I wasn't, the 18.1 didn't add anything for me. Especially in an era where, you know, what we might envision as popular today might not be tomorrow, or things that we're not even anticipating. So anytime we have language like this where we're calling out explicit items, it may or may not be helpful. I don't know, Mr. Campion.
So strike such as and on. Is kind of what you're getting at?
Or I'm sorry.
I'm just trying to, like 18.1.
Right.
You don't object to the use a range of tools to make the most effective use of transportation system by enabling services.
No, you know, for example, I like the idea in 18.3 where we say, you know, we're going to use small scale pilots, you know, when it makes sense to test some ideas. That's fine. I just thought 18.1 didn't tell me anything that wasn't already in the heading.
We can trim this up.
Basically, delete everything after system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because really all that is a laundry list of
services.
I don't feel passionately one way or the other. I would simply say that some of these are terms that, you know, folks might not be familiar with. There's a lot of really good ideas in there, like how they're presented. And the key thing being, yes, things change over time. And I think that's more of a motivation to update the plan over time as opposed to worry about some what the current solutions might be today.
I support striking it.
Yeah, I guess
just
strike.
Well,
it helps
and I guess
well.
that I that's why I said the thought the opening comment of 18.2 said it, leveraging existing and new. You know. So I just kind of started there and struck 18.1.
That's fine.
Okay. That's all I had on that section. Okay. Section 19. So my question there was whether, so it talks about accommodate the needs of local neighborhood travel. So in the group's view, that's not encompassed in section 7, where we talk about create and maintain neighborhoods attractive to current and future residents. Is travel not a component of that, Mr. Campion?
I like this bullet because I've had a number of neighborhoods that I've had to go and talk to them about how to calm traffic on their local roadways. So to me, this one focused in a little bit more on the design aspects of neighborhoods that make neighborhood travel unsafe. Long stretches of unbroken road in the middle of a neighborhood tend to be where people speed. But if we at least throw that out there, that that's a goal and policies to make those safe, I think how we meet that is still important to me, but we may not have general agreement. I think it's a good bullet. That's what it covered in my mind.
And maybe be more clear. What I was suggesting is taking that 19.1 bullet and make it 7.4. In other words, transit and travel is a component of making neighborhoods attractive to current and future residents. That's all.
Perfectly fine. I mean, the content of the policy is important, though. So if we get rid of all of these policy points, I'm going to want to bring the goal back. Does that make sense? Reserve the right to complain in the future.
All right. Anything else on that section?
So you're scratching or moving 19.1 to 7.4?
Yeah, that was my suggestion, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Here it goes. It's just getting rid of section after section.
Pardon me.
We're working towards Hickey's idea.
Yeah. All right. Section 20. So, once again, I was wondering if this was started to be redundant to Section 11. Section 11 is develop a comprehensive transportation system. Section 20 says we'll incorporate design consideration as an integral component of transportation system development. So I guess the only question is, does it need to be called out separately or somehow blended with Section 11?
I think the goals say something different. They're not saying the same thing. We may be able to move some things around, but I do think the overarching goal of developing a comprehensive transportation system is actually quite different from calling out the consideration of design as an integral component to the system itself.
I think this really just goes to one of the overarching comments that we've made multiple times, that we're trying to simplify the document overall. It seems like the more words we add, the more we get kind of wound around the axle. So if there's any opportunity like that to make it more concise, that's where I'm trying to head. That's my only question or comment on Section 20. Mr. Hickey.
Talk about 2022 just for a little bit because I don't get to talk about it enough today. But, you know, when you look at the Complete Streets policy from 2009, it's a perfectly reasonable policy. When you look at some of the other documents we've come up with, for example, the DMC design guidelines. So unless we take the time to go back and fix those, Bicycle Master Plan, the DMC design guidelines, you know, I worry about having guidance like this. That's where you run into converting vehicle lanes into bicycle lanes at the cost of what? So the word appropriate, what's appropriate? So again, unless we take the time to go back and fix the DMC design guidelines, for the bicycle master plan, I do worry about some policies such as this.
I think everyone's on board with going back and getting into those documents.
I mean, on the time frame we're talking about, I mean, I think if we do an April review, I think staff is going to have a revamped plan. We're just going to kind of revisit what's already there, which is the first step. But, I mean,
you know, ultimately, all these projects come to us, you know, when you get to these major arterials, they come to the council for decision-making, and, you know, what one person thinks is reasonable is clearly not necessarily what another person thinks is reasonable, so there's going to be some opinions that go into that.
My concern is staff presents us plans based on what they think we want. So if I'm not clear in telling what I want, then they're going to come up with things. Fourth Street topology. So.
And again, Fourth Street topology was something that you didn't support, but it would appear that the community and the council is not with you, but we had that opportunity to make that decision.
Other questions, comments?
I must understand the response to Councilman Mankey's point. There seems to be a suggestion that there's going to be a review of the complete streets prior to adoption of a comprehensive plan. We haven't made that assertion yet. If that is the assertion, then I just want to know, because we may go and review these documents and we may not agree. We may not agree with your position on the document. And so we've revisited it.
Sure.
Haven't changed it. And then are you going to support this anyway, given that we went and reviewed it?
I will support when I see the final version.
I guess that's...
As far as my expectations for the April bicycle master plan, unless the staff knows something I don't know, I mean, I don't think there's been a big effort staff to put into making the recommendations changes. I think it's going to be a review of where we're at, is what I understand.
Big picture in terms of the policies under 20, I do support that. I do support the policies under 20.
I'm just trying to establish. It's really important to me to like understand everyone's parameters for adoption, because we're really looking for support here to get this document passed. Is the parameter in your mind a review of the policy, or is it changes that support your opinion of how the policy should be? Because those are very, very different objectives. If we review it and don't necessarily have agreement, but have consensus among the council about how to move forward, if that doesn't agree with you, you will not pass the comprehensive plan. That's important for your colleagues to know, because ultimately we have to find a way to pass. This is a very important thing for the community to have. I don't like putting people on the spot, but I think we do have to understand what everyone's requirements are to get 5 votes here, because community deserves to have this process come to a conclusion, and I hate to see new extensions added to it.
I think it raises a good question. Once again, that's why I was more leaning more toward just using the section heading for number 20, because I understand what you're saying. You can fill in the blank for anything. We're talking about ensuring that we incorporate complete streets, but what happens if you adopt this plan, but then you subsequently don't agree with the complete streets or whatever plan we're talking about? It puts us, each of us, in kind of a conflicted position, not knowing what that future plan might be. So do we do ourselves a disservice by putting some of the specifics in there? Ms. Johnson?
But this is something we can come back and change in the future.
The comprehensive plan?
Yes. I just want to be clear, like, that's my understanding, is that we review the complete streets or the bicycle master plan and we go, we change it, we can come back and change it within the comprehensive plan, correct?
We can change it, but it takes 5 votes.
Whoa, one brain, 3 voices.
I think we all agree, yes, you can change it, but it takes 5 votes.
Okay.
It's not a simple majority, it's a simple.
But we can change any of the other plans with simple majority.
So... The city attorney and I had an exchange of some emails last week just clarifying what pieces are comprehensive plan components and what plans are not. And we might be deceived quite easily by the titles. So bike master plan, by title, might not tell you it's part of the comprehensive plan. It is. Downtown master plan is part of the comprehensive plan. So
okay. We
have to be really careful. It has to do with how it was adopted and whether or not it was adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. So
any changes within the bicycle master plan would require a supermajority?
Yes.
Okay.
Would require what?
Five majority.
Or simple majority?
Supermajority. Five.
Okay.
Thank you. Just cleared a whole bunch of stuff up.
I do want to ask, I think Mr. Campy brought up a good point, because my understanding is that some of these other plans were secondary to getting the comprehensive plan approved. So if what we're dealing with is a rewrite of additional plans, I guess I would like to know that at this point, like what Mr. Campy has said there. Is anyone suggesting that?
Yeah, I'll just say, in the end, we haven't even seen the appendices that were are still put them up as placeholders. When I see the final plan, I decide after we've been through it all and I see what the final draft looks like. We're taking a lot of notes. There's going to be a markup copy, so it's pretty hard to commit to something that we haven't even seen.
I understand that, but one thing that, I think the question was not necessarily that broad, and it was specifically if this comes before you without having updated bicycle master plans or other plans, is that a non-starter for you?
As long as there's safeguards in this document that it's clear when staff looks at it, they know what I think. I mean, that's what I'm going to vote for. So if everybody disagrees with me, then I'm just one vote.
I think the thing that has been kind of questioned and goes back and forth with Mr. Hickey is which plans are a part of this and which ones are not. We've had that discussion a number of times as we reviewed this document, and there's obviously a lot of confusion with the groups here. What is and what is not. So it would be nice to have a list of what plans are actually a part of the comprehensive plan.
Yeah, we'll follow up. I think there's some information here, but we'll pull it out and make sure it's clear.
Thank you. The other thing the council had instructed us on in a previous discussion was to be clear that when we have multiple plans, what the hierarchy in order of would be. And the conclusion was that this one would supersede. So all the other ones would be subservient to this one. So if there's ever a conflict, that this one supersedes.
Well, I guess a point of confusion that toward the beginning of this process was some of those subservient plans, like Complete Streets, would changes to that plan also require a supermajority? Because originally they were approved, I believe, on a simple majority. But now if we're, making them explicitly a component of the comp plan, then by their nature they would also require supermajority.
We can verify the votes on those other plans that were adopted as part of the comprehensive plan. I can tell you, because it was a pretty seminal moment for Rochester, the Complete Streets policy was a unanimous vote by the City Council, 7-0, to approve that.
Mr.
In May of 2009.
Yeah.
Everyone's
value. Okay.
All right. Good enough on that one for now? Section. I'll move on to section 21 then. Jumped out at me in terms of philosophically. There it says that we will give top priority to maintaining existing roadway transit, etc. And clearly we run into some conflicts there, as we did last week when we talk about reconfiguring a finite amount of real estate, the right-of-way, and to change the mix from vehicular to allowing for bicycles and so forth. And so, anyway, that just jumped out at me, 21.2. If the priority is to maintain that asset or that infrastructure asset, would you not focus on rehabbing or maintaining the road surface and so forth? I don't know where that ties into some of the other configuration discussions that we might have, reconfiguration. Mr. Wojcik.
I don't read that the same way at all. I see this as a fix-it-first policy when you have limited funds. If you can't afford to maintain the roadways that you already have, don't be building more roadways that you can't necessarily afford to build. In terms of how those roadways, you know, the 90 feet of public right-of-way happen to be allocated, that's more of a design specific at the time kind of thing. But I do see this as important, that how can we justify growth in the transportation grid if we can't maintain what we have.
Other questions, comments? Do you have anything on that section? Okay, we'll leave that alone for now. And then section 22. More of I don't know if this is a real question or not, but 22.4, where we talk specifically about the international airport. I suppose it belongs in the comp plan, but then I could argue that it seems out of sync to have it in this plan, but I don't know. It just struck me as I read it, Mr. Hickey.
And along the same lines, I have questions on 22.2. We can probably maybe break it into two-part question before the end and after the end. So support initiatives to enhance commercial flight connections, public avenue flight, on 22.2, the first half of 22.2.
What would it look like specifically to support those initiatives?
What does that mean? We're going to support initiatives to enhance commercial flight connections. So again, I'm thinking in terms of land development and those types of things. So what are we talking about there?
So one of the things with the Rochester Airport that's really unique is I think we have 4 FedEx planes that come in every single day with testing and lab materials for Mayo Clinic. And that's a really essential piece of getting specimens from all over the country that come here on a daily basis, and making sure that we can get that freight from the airport conveniently and efficiently to the labs where they're being tested. So if there are things that we need to do within the community to make sure that we can support that level of efficiency and to encourage that, maybe as part of the DOC initiative.
So, I mean, I agree that airport support, and I get that, but I just don't understand what that would look like. Support incentives as part of, again, as part of the comprehensive plan, as opposed to, you know, some initiative the airport brings to us for support or something, right? So I'll just leave that as a question. The second part, explore potential regional passenger rail opportunities. What does that mean? I mean, I know what a railroad is, or light rail or whatever else, but what would the city's involvement in that be?
Well, the city has had some past involvement in the exploration of passenger rail to Rochester, and I think that still floats out there. Within MnDOT and within other regional transportation circles.
I'm going to be in support of that. So.
So one of the, you know, this is not necessarily just zip rail either, but one of the low-cost, simple solutions that I've heard talked about is, you know, can you just run a commuter rail on the existing rail bed from, you know, bringing it from St. Charles on one side, Dodge Center or something on the other? Is that a possibility? And, you know, is there a way of doing that? So it doesn't mean it's necessarily going to happen, but I wouldn't want to turn my back on these opportunities. And Zip Rail would have been good for the community here, but there are some folks in between here and the Twin Cities that strongly disagree with that. So,
and I think it doesn't have to be rail. I mean, talking about bus transportation going out and having a frequent route. That's also being talked about. Don't forget, we're talking about the CAF too, so we're talking about encouraging regional carriers or other carriers to come here. We want to make sure they have the top end navigational things to land at. So we're looking at I look at it as more broad than just saying it's a rail. We're talking about any way that we can to increase the activity at the airport, and that could be done by the CAF too, navigational system as well as. We've already talked about the fact that it's going to happen, where they're going to start running bus transportation downtown to the airport.
Mr. Hickey?
So just to be clear, it doesn't kind of explain what it says. It says enhance through rail.
with rail.
I was just going to say, put all modes or something
sure.
on that.
Right? Sounds good. Just cross all rail.
Yeah.
See passenger opportunities.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Sounds awesome.
All right. All right, that, by my book, that brings us down to the last 10 pages of that section 3 to see if there are any comments on that. I had a few. We can go through those fairly quickly. On the first page, and I'll preface that by saying I still think, and I know you're going to address some of this, I still think some of this is repetitive and the writing could be tightened up, but I know you're going to take a swing at that. On page 265, really the second paragraph from the bottom, my only comment there is, once again, we want to make sure which sub-plans we're talking about and be crystal clear on whether, you know, what it takes to change those, five votes, for example. That was my only comment on that page. On page 266, there's a heading, section heading called Implementation Priorities. The only comment I made there is, given Mr. Reimer's comments recently, we need to make sure that our priorities are coinciding with our strategic plan as well as our financial planning. That's all in terms of setting our priorities. I didn't have a comment on page 267. Page 268, where we talk about small area plans, and I think Mitzi said we'll still have some of those that we will continue to adopt and respect. That was my only comment on that page. Mr. Hickey.
And on the fourth bullet down, we talk about consider the use of minimum densities and the requirement for more integrated mixed use. What's the context? Are we talking about for like an incentive development, restricted development, or for all developments?
Which number are you, or which
one, two, three,
part are you on?
Third bullet down. Consider the use of minimum densities and requirements for more integrated mixed-use development. So what's the context of that? It's been a while since I highlighted it. So is that something restrictive in incentive development, or are we going to say all developments have a minimum density?
No, I think that's partly related to the land uses that will complement the primary transit network, and the first part of this discussion will come to you soon with a consultant who's looking at some interim strategies for transit-oriented development. It's really about the zoning in setting some targets around density, because the density puts seats or butts on seats on those buses,
sure.
And they work together.
Okay. Mr. Ruska.
269, the second bullet there, it talks about some of the development entitlements. It says revising parking requirements to promote walking, biking, and transit. Is that, Ms., can you touch on that one?
Well, I think this really complements the discussions that are happening with the downtown
okay.
right now, and I think you're going to see some more details coming out in the next couple weeks on that.
Okay.
Okay, I'm on page 270 now.
269, fifth bullet from the top. So, expediting the permitting and approval process for development to meet design expectations and primary objectives. So again, what would that look like?
So the intent there is if we can set up a system where we've debated on the front end what the development expectations are for infill and redevelopment and TOD, transit-oriented development, in some locations. We're not going to ever capture all of them, but if we can set those parameters out up front, we should be able to simplify the review and approval process and make it much quicker. And maybe even leave that at the staff level instead of having a series of two or four public hearings.
Okay. Next page, page 270, really more of an observation here when you talk about that section called infill standards, and I know, and it talks about introducing new zoning districts, and that's exactly the kind of thing we have to be open to. I know Mr. Bildeback is working on some ideas related to vertical zoning, so no correction there, just an observation that we need to be open to those things. Yes, sir.
infill and redevelopment incentive that's listed there, it says that we will target incentives, designated redevelopment areas and so on. Who will do the targeting and how will that be done?
Well, we'll have to work with city administration and the city council to bring forth ideas about programs and incentives that we might be able to use that are outside of the zoning ordinance, and to identify the primary transit network and some very key nodes that might be catalytic is probably how we would approach that discussion.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
If you have ideas for redevelopment areas, you let me know. Because I think that's the other part, is it's a two-way street. It isn't just staff that are hearing about people who are looking for redevelop areas. It's also, when we hear about that, let's have a conversation about whether it makes sense to use that area as a redevelopment project.
And again, is that just in the downtown, or is that?
That's one.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Okay. Page 271. No real comments on that page. Anyone else? Page 272. Once again, didn't have any comments there. Actually, it's that bottom paragraph that carries over to 274.
Where are you going to take? I've got a question on 273.
Okay, go ahead.
So on the bullet that talks about it, adopt existing and future revisions of the NACDO Urban Bikeway Design Guideline, FHWA Separated Bike Lane Planning Design Guides, so I think we have a hard enough time keeping up on our own plans. So I've never read that plan, and there's no date on it, there's no revision. So is this the version that was there when this process started 3 years ago? Is the current version? And how do we improve all future revisions of documents we have no control over? So I'd like to strike that whole bullet.
Mr. Campion.
I'd like to offer an alternative fix. Would be just to say, consider adoption of the existing and future revisions of the NACDO guidelines.
I've never read it.
I've
had enough time keeping up to our own plans.
You have not yet considered it.
So why not say best practices or something?
I see it.
That's just my thoughts.
That's it.
The council doesn't necessarily have to adopt these standards. It might be enough to just call them out as the standards to consider in designing. These are best practices in the engineering world. In FHWA is for federal highway. That's a federal highway document. And NACDO is the National Association of City Transportation Officials. They're engineer authored documents.
It actually says at the top, the following actions should be considered in the near term. So there's no compulsion here to approve it.
But it does say adopt. So
strike adopt, put consider.
Consider.
Consider. Mr. Wojcik?
Moz, if consider makes everyone happy, we do consider. I would simply say that it's not necessarily incumbent upon politicians to understand engineering documents, and it is incumbent upon engineers to understand the engineering documents. And this is the world class of where this kind of design is right now. So my expectation, irrespective of what the language said here, is that our professional staff would continue to use the best research available.
And there's a difference between considering it, using it as a reference, and adapting it as that's the standard. So that's where I have the concern.
Yeah, I have no problem changing adapt to consider.
Very good. Thank you.
Let's see.
I'm sorry.
Well, I just offer a little language change here. Just ask if this meets your intent. To consider applying the NACDO Urban Bikeway Design Guide and Federal Highway Separated Bike Lanes, blah, 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 to guide local planning design. So it's considering applying that. That doesn't mean necessarily the council has to adopt that or give that directive, but it's more of a direction to the staff to consider using those best practices that are authored through the industry.
And I think that's what I was looking for, as opposed to the more declarative adopt existing and future revisions. That sort of felt like it was locking me into something that I don't know what it could be in the future.
If the staff understands that, I mean, we can actually drop the names of the studies to me. Use existing and future best practices to guide local planning, designing, and reconstruction projects. I mean, you can get as vague as you want. I think the intent here was to give some breadcrumbs to a reader who might be looking for some more information about what we're using as, or what we're considering our best practices. So I prefer to leave the names of the studies in here, and I was perfectly fine with the language Ms. Baker put forward.
Okay. Page 274, any comments? I'm sorry. Oh, we're good. Thank you. Page 274, any comments? Mr. Ruska.
On the parking that talks about the sum principles, who determines the principles, and if they meet standards, what are the standards?
Which paragraph are you on?
It's the first bullet on page 274.
Okay.
Sum principles, shared, unbundled, managed, and appropriately priced parking. I never heard of sum before.
I think this is a part of what you're going to start to see come forward with the Destination Medical Center Integrated Transit Studies, is that there will be some need for us to revisit some local policies, and this is falling into that bucket. What those programs and policies look like are not exactly tangible to me right now, but I think they're things that we're going to have to develop and bring forward to you in the future.
So we're not committing to anything if this is how it is. I mean, we couldn't say, like, that considers the use of the sum principles versus relies. Because I just have a hard time saying that this is what we're going to go with if nobody knows what it is.
You could say consider developing at the very beginning, make it a little more loose.
How about develop a downtown parking management program that considers the use of?
I like that. I don't know where you came up with that, but that's good.
A wise man has said.
You know, ultimately, we've already funded this. We're already doing this, so it's in process.
You achieved one of your goals. One of the goals of this document.
Process.
All right, is that it for that page? Page 275. And under the section complete corridors and streets, we've already kind of answered this one. It would be the second bullet, which says expand the policy of complete streets to encompass the concept of complete corridors. And once again, I don't know what that is. We haven't really fleshed that out yet. So I would be hesitant to adopt it as part of this plan or commit to it. But again, as long as we know that updates to those sub-plans takes an equal amount of vetting and voting, then I'm okay with that.
We may actually be able to drop this one, because my recollection of the complete streets policy is that it calls out complete street systems and not necessarily all modes on all roads. And that's really what this bullet point is saying too.
Yes.
I'll just point out, I don't know, I guess it's more of an editorial kind of thing, but under street design and operation, I think the first sentence, I just think it's an odd sentence. Street design is historically been driven by standards that respond primarily to the needs of motorists. I mean, I think for the foreseeable future, street designs will continue to respond primarily to the needs of motorists, but as we move forward, we're incorporating multimodal transportation. So, I mean, I don't think that's changed. I mean, we still move cars down streets.
Anyone else? All right. I am on page 276. Yes, Mr. Ruska?
The top line there, I guess I like, you know, I think it's a good idea that, and we talked about this a little bit in the Rochester Urban Area Streets Design Guide. How would that get created, and how would that, who, you know, was that like a approval process of planning, public works, how exactly would that work? So
It could be a joint venture with planning and public works, but I would imagine that to be a document that would eventually come forward to you.
Okay.
How do you think it should be done? Because I think we have a strong input in how that will get a conflict.
Okay. And then on that page under street topology, the bullet, and I think we've already talked about that language, that we would develop standards that should consider best practices, such as the urban street design guide and so forth.
This one already spells it out. Yeah, that language is better.
Mm-hmm. I will just say, I'll just the same thing. Rather than call it a specific guide, I don't know what's in that street guide, so I'm saying we're going to use the practices outlined here.
What doesn't? It says consider.
I think the reason
I would hope that you're not considering at all that our engineering staff or public designs are. If it's you and I that are implementing the NATCO principles, I think there are other issues we need to cross.
All right. Is that it? So then we have about 3 or 4 pages devoted to part 4. Were there any comments on that? It talks about a regular review and updates process. Some criteria, Mr. Campion.
I'll reiterate, it will be fundamental to understand the umbrella of the comprehensive plan and what is covered underneath it, as well as what's not, so we can probably make some logical decision amongst the council about whether to move certain components into the comprehensive plan and take certain pieces out of the comprehensive plan, which I would assume would also be our purview. That's it.
Okay. Bitsy?
We did discuss the last few pages. It was maybe even a month ago. And we did get some feedback from you on some language changes and questions about amending the plan, so we have taken those into account. We will be modifying some of that language.
Yeah, I agree. Those pages seem to be reflective of some of the comments we've made along the way, so that's helpful.
So just to be clear, we're talking about 278, the criteria for proposed amendments. Is that what we're talking about?
Okay. That's correct.
We made some comments about the amendment process, given some of our experience with that and how complicated it can be to bootstrap some of the stuff and how important it is. So, thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on the draft document for today? Mr. Hickey.
I think just as this document, I think I'm not sure how we got put together, but I think section 3 should be section 1. I think the last paragraph, kind of that language that talks about this is the capstone overriding document, that should be front and center in section 1, like one of the first things we read. Just the hierarchy of how these plans go together, the relationship to other city plans, I think that should be front and center. And again, if this is the important part of the plan, I think this should be section 1.
I've actually already moved that stuff to the beginning of the plan.
And I agree. I think that was one of our comments along the way. Section 3 is really the crux of everything. And to a large extent, 1 and 2 are more appendix items if people really want to understand some of the rationale and so forth. Any other comments on the draft document?
And I mentioned this earlier, the only from previous discussion, the only one that I got negative feedback on was, I think it's section 2 or 3 is the health. The access to healthy foods as a policy is something that I would like to see maintained in the plan.
But you were supportive of that, weren't you? You were supportive of what was originally in there.
Yes.
I find it funny that they would contact you and you were supportive and not us that was questioning it.
I was there.
You were there?
Mr. Campion.
To that extent, there was some talk, Ms. Baker, about bringing in people to discuss the health impact portion. What would you suggest we do to maybe get a little bit more of the understanding behind that document? Is it something that can be distributed written, or does it require a presentation?
There's a
tremendous amount of written material and research that I could overwhelm you with. But I don't think that's really what you want. So I'd really like to hear feedback from the council. Are you looking for us to bring somebody in for a COW meeting discussion? Would you like to have a workshop where we bring in somebody who's coming at this from the medical and scientific perspective? Or would you like us to try to just send you some documents that you might want to peruse?
We even talked about potentially, you know, sending you some links to videos that you could review on your own time if that was helpful. I guess we could do it, as Nancy indicated, we could do it anyway. But the one thing I think we're moving forward, looking for implementation on this and our March comedy agenda, as you'll see, you know, coming up is, you know, pretty loaded up, given the fact that you have the National League of Cities meeting as well as some of the precursor items to the PMCC meeting in March. Quite a bit going on.
There is a PBS series that Dr. Richard Jackson had put together, and he used to be the director at the CDC, and he was a pediatrician. He's now on the research side of the topic and has really become a spokesperson for healthy communities and the physiological impacts of different types of built environments on individuals and the health outcome impacts.
I would suggest that the audience for this is not necessarily just the city council, and that I would be in favor, and it doesn't necessarily have to coincide with our target date on this, but doing some sort of a community event where we bring in a panel of experts to talk about the intersection of community health and comprehensive planning, because that has become just a tremendous topic in urban planning nationwide, and I don't know if we necessarily have enough exposure to that, but it would be a good learning opportunity for everyone.
Mr. Campion.
Could you provide some details about said segment on PBS, so maybe we could review that ahead of time?
Can very easily get you the link for that.
And then, you know, I'll admit that it's not necessarily me looking for convincing. So I think, you know, part of it is it not up for discussion? Where are we at on it? Does more information help explain why I was put in the plan in the first place? Is that something that is going to be beneficial to some of the council members that I think have concerns about it?
Mr. Hickey?
So I'd say for me, I mean, we don't necessarily need a whole COW devoted to it, but I mean, literally, all I hear is slogans. I haven't seen, you know, just a 10-minute overview. What are we talking about? Besides provide healthy food to all or whatever is in the plan right now. I mean, I get parks, green space, open space, as it relates to the comprehensive plan and planning. That part I get. The rest of it, all I hear, you know, all I hear is slogans. So.
So would you prefer that to be like a portion of the COW? I'm perfectly happy dedicating COW time to it. It seems like a reasonable use. Don't want to derail some notes.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, provide something in concise form that just explains it beyond slogans.
Yeah.
So
well, I suggest that we do that. We'll send the first thing. Sure. If the council, if you feel like you need more, we can obviously facilitate that.
Mr. Bilderbeck?
Yeah, I would just as soon have us move on, have the video and written information if we need it. Give us those resources. Let us go back and look at that. That way planning can take the time and effort to try to clean this up and take all the notes that have been said and bring it back. So.
Okay. All right. That
so
concludes.
I don't
oh, I'm sorry.
Like I have any direction on 3.2.
That we're going to get supporting information and
yeah,
so the decision will be made later then. Okay, so it's neither in
yeah,
or
out. Right.
Okay.
It's in decision purgatory.
All right.
That's cool.
So what's the approximate timeline that it's going to take you to go through and edit and scrub the document and so forth before we get the next revision to look at?
Well, we actually think that we could have Section 1 redlined within a week and back in front of you. Section 2 is a much bigger animal, and so we're wrestling with that one a bit more. Section 3 shouldn't take us very long because it's a pretty short section.
You just did it.
So over the next few weeks, you should be able to get all three of these back in front of you. We'll do it in redline version. It's going to look really clunky that way, but I know people really want to see where the
That's
edits funny. Are.
Okay.
But we can also provide you with a second
clean
version
sure.
as though just say hypothetically accept all those changes, it'd be a briefer document to come through.
Which I think would be important, because then you can see the brevity as we've tried to
use.
And as promised, I said I'd ask this at every single meeting. The current drive to date is still April 2nd, 2018.
Yep, if it's possible. I know Spaker will be gone. But at the same time, we'll see what the edits happen here, see what your responses are to that. We have continued the public hearing to that date, regardless. And so we have to be cognizant of that. But then the next step, you guys can decide at that point where you're at.
Is it the council's preference to see the next iteration section by section? Or, I mean, my thought would be get the entire document in front of you in a redline version, and you know, it's one final look as opposed to metering it out again.
I would prefer priority be given to Section 3, and that we get Section 3 to us as soon as possible, because the Section 3 will define whether or not this council can pass the comprehensive plan. I'm 100% certain of that.
Agreed.
All right.
You may get 1 and 3 together, because we're really close.
All I'm doing is I was asked to prioritize, and that would be my priority. I'll let the rest of the council speak for themselves.
So 3 and... 1 may come out in the relatively near future. 2 is going to take us a little more time, as we said. Public hearing continued to the 2nd. We don't have any more COW meetings, I don't think, right now planned on this topic. Though let's see if you the comments and remarks you have, we may have to look at changing some of the future items on a COW meeting. Does that sound like a fair process and expectation? What we're shooting for? Okay.
Thank you all for your discussion, the time and energy you put into this. Seriously, it's a big effort.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We went a few minutes over. Thank you for everyone hanging in. Any other topics, urgent, Mr. Woodger?
Yes, and also Mr. Johnson had to leave, but one of the questions that we talked about is she expressed an interest in going through the leadership grader process, and she was wondering if that was something that was central use of our education fund.
What's the cost of that program? Anyone know offhand?
$1,500, a couple thousand.
Yeah, at the top. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know what, if she needs that to help her bring her in line with what's going on here in Rochester as far as how departments and things are run, I've got no issue with that.
Yeah. I'd prefer it to come from her, though. I mean, I'd like, I don't know why she didn't ask us. She could send out an email to everybody. And, yeah.
Oh, that would violate the open meeting.
So, I mean, Steve could
have.
I mean, you know, I'd like to hear from her on what the value and what where she sees it fits in. I mean, I'm supportive of it. I just, you know, it seems kind of strange that she shouldn't just throw it by us.
Okay. So we'll watch for a note with some more explanation, but I don't think people are generally opposed. All right. Anything else for this afternoon? Then we are adjourned. Thank you.
Good job.